That's an action. That's action on the Eric Anders Lang Show.
Nice.
This is an improvised podcast. We weren't going to do a podcast, Brian.
And then I showed up and he said, let's do a podcast.
Yeah, you just showed up and you're like, I was just looking at you and I was hearing you talk. Brian Skavnak, you are, I was going to say you're a tremendous slouch, but.
you know me well. Good. Nice.
You hail from Minnesota.
I do.
You care about golf.
I care a lot, yeah.
But more importantly, why do you care about golf?
I care about the kids in golf.
Right.
Mostly because I want to see them grow to be good kids, and golf does that for people.
It does do that. You carved out a little name for yourself.
A little bit.
We were in the kitchen, and I was telling Will, the intern, today, shout out Will.
Will, the intern. That's a good Will, ring to it.
Will came in as an intern, but he may own the company in a week or
could.
Two. I don't know. He's got a
He's
lot.
He's a good dude.
He has a lot of ideas. It was crazy because, I mean, we were talking about the coincidences surrounding Will's, materialization in the process here. And then I was telling him your story about how you and I met years and years and years ago now.
Yep.
Six?
Something like that, yeah. Five, six, yeah. It's got to be.
And to even add more, coincidental nature, we met in Vegas where I'm going tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Have fun.
But anyway, you at that time you were doing basically group and individual lessons with juniors.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of my 80% of the stuff I teach are two juniors.
Even still,
yep. I get their families involved now, but it's mostly juniors because I think like a kid and I act like a kid, so why not hang around kids because they're fun.
Yeah, you are. I've seen you interact, and you are very playful, which is unusual for adults.
Yeah,
adults usually have an agenda.
I think it's easier for me to talk to kids than talk to adults.
Yeah. Because
I was the kid growing up that didn't talk to my senior year in high school because I was afraid of everything.
Why do you think that is? I mean, what is the actual difference?
I don't know. I don't know if it's... I was so scared of judgment before. And then you realize when you get older, like, people really don't judge you that much.
No.
You think it's all in your own head. And the kids are like, hey, you hit a golf ball. Hey, look how far that goes when it goes, like a top one. And it could go, oh, it's the best shot I've ever seen. It's awesome. They love it.
Yeah. Like, whoa, how far can you hit that 7 iron?
And I could shank one. They're like, whoa, how'd you get that in the air that far?
Yeah. So we played golf together early on. When we first met, we played a couple rounds together. And I think there was about 15 people on this little golf trip.
Yep.
It was a fundraiser for Be the Ball that our mutual friend Kevin had set up. And those of you listening at home, if you want to get a visual for Kevin, watch the first episode from season 3 of Adventures in Golf. Kevin is featured as a local Minnesotan describing the winter golf-crazed Minnesotan.
He's the one who looks really cold outside, no jacket on. That's Kevin.
We were cold.
It was really cold that day.
But Brian, Kevin introduced you and I on this golf trip fundraiser to Vegas, where we attempted to our best efforts to raise money for Be the Ball.
Yep.
Which, we'll just say that it was a success.
It was fun. We got a friendship out of it. How about that?
Well, and
you know what I remember from that?
Tell me.
I don't know if it was like the first or second hole of whatever course bears best or whatever course we played first.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We
you got your first eagle. That's what I remember. I remember you.
Oh my God.
You almost drove the green.
I remember it now.
And then it was either a chip or a putt from the right on the fringe.
It was
I remember
a par
what it was.
Four and I chipped in.
Yeah. And you looked at me and you said, that's my first eagle. I'm like, dude, that's your first eagle. Sweet.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's what I remember. See, cause I don't remember what I shot. I remember what you did.
Right.
I remember the people there. That's
dude,
the fun stuff.
That kind of makes me want to cry.
All right.
Because I don't remember that. I mean, I remember it now that you tell me. But what I remember is that, this whole trip was engineered around this idea of making money. Not making money, but, furthering a passionate project that I had.
Yeah.
Which was important and still is. And for those of you that are wondering where Be the Ball is, don't worry. It's somewhere under the carpet. I'm trying to find it. No. It's a great film, and we're just finishing it up. And everything's fine. Everything's fine, Mom.
Nope.
But what I remember from that trip to Vegas is that I remember enjoying playing golf with you specifically.
Thanks.
You're obviously a very good golfer, a PGA pro. You can hit the shit out of a golf ball. You've got a smooth swing. But also, you really had this fine dance of enjoying it and paying attention to the game and the shots and the score, but having so much fun with it.
You have to. I mean, it'll drive you nuts if you don't.
I mean, it's rare for people of your skill level to do that, though.
I kind of agree with you on that. It's you're either ultra competitive and you want to kick everyone's ass all the time, or you don't care at all. And maybe, I don't know if I'm on the don't care side, or, you know, I don't keep score when I play.
But you know what you shot.
I know what I shot exactly. I played so many rounds that you know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And at the end, it's, I tell my students
bogey, 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 birdie, birdie, kabiri, birdie. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever it is.
When was the last time you played a full 18?
Last Saturday.
What'd you shoot?
I have no idea.
Come on.
It was 41 degrees out in Minnesota. And
oh my God.
We were going to Top Golf. They just opened Top Golf in Minnesota.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. It was a 2.5 hour wait. I have this high school crew that I go with every Saturday. I've taught them since they were 5, and they're 17 now. And so there's like 5 or 6 or 7 of them that, depending who can make it each week, and they're awesome. They're so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we go every Saturday somewhere, and Top Golf was the wait. So we're like, all right, let's go over to the other local course. And it was so cold.
Oh my God. Did they have heaters? They went somewhere else, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you played golf outside.
So we played golf outside. It's 40, snow? It's 41, it's windy. It felt like it was going to snow. And that's even, you know, from Minnesota's are crazy when it comes to golf like that, as you look at episode one.
Chili Open.
There you go.
By the way, those of you listening, Brian was an integral part of the Chili Open episode from season 3 of Adventures in Golf, because I stayed in your basement. With David, and I stayed in your basement, David the DP, and we watched Planet Earth every night.
Yeah, and actually you got me into Planet Earth. And my kids were like, hey, can we watch Planet Earth? It's awesome.
That was like one of the coziest Adventures in Golf lodging stories of ever. It was just so nice. Yeah, it was really generous of you. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
So you don't know what you shot because it was too cold.
I don't know. I know that I lost a couple golf balls. The water took some. I know I made a couple birdies.
Yeah.
I know... And I don't care, because I was hanging out with these kids that were fun and they were goofing around. And,
You seem like you could be a birdie machine. I feel like you could unload some fucking birdies.
Yeah, that's actually my goal in golf. If I was going to have one goal in golf, is to birdie every hole.
In one round?
In one round. I want to birdie 18 holes in
59.
A row. Yep. I don't want an eagle. I don't want a par.
54.
50, whatever course I'm playing. Yeah, I want 18 birdies. I've started off birdie, birdie, birdie before. That's the best I've done.
That's
the fourth hole, I'm like, nope, I can't do it now.
That's
all right, cool.
House of cards.
Playing. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think Tiger Woods has been trying to do this.
Could be.
Yeah. And probably everybody.
I just don't. When I was kind of getting into teaching a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
I'd shoot like mid 70s. You know, I kept score then. Uh-huh. And one of my instructors said, hey, Brian, you know, what's your goal? What do you want to shoot? I'm like, 72. That's my goal. And he's like, you don't want to shoot 68? I'm like, well, yeah, I want to shoot 68. And he said, like, why didn't you tell me that then? I'm like, because I don't think I can do it.
We got a dog barking.
Will, the intern.
Yeah, Riley. Riley. Will asked if we could bring Riley, and of course I said yes. And so Riley and Snowball have been having a wonderful Thursday, getting to know each other.
Might be down here in a second.
Back to the program. So then you explore the idea of shooting 4 under, 68.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, well, why didn't you tell me that? I'm like, I don't think I can do that.
Ooh, and I don't either, to be honest with you.
And so right when he said, why not? And I didn't know. I didn't have an answer at the time. And since then, I've shot plenty of rounds in the 60s, and I didn't think anything of it. It was just that one. It's funny. There's little things in your life that are like little breakthroughs. Huh. That's one thing I remember, that like, why don't you think you can shoot that? And I had no reason. I don't know. I just didn't think I could. And then eventually I did.
You know, I need to fucking get back into this mode, because right now I play 1 under, 2 over, 1 under through 9. And then on 10, I have a double. And then on 11, I have a double. And then on 12, I have a double. And then on 13, I have a triple. And all of a sudden, I'm back to shooting 82. And then I just par out. And it's so fucking weird how I literally level up to whatever I thought I was supposed to do.
Because you get back to your comfort level, whatever that is.
Yeah.
You know, people always want to break 90 or break 80 or break whatever. I taught a guy once who broke, he wanted to break 90. And he came back to me, he's like, Brian, I shot a 39 in the front. I'm like, sweet. Now, usually when everybody tells me they shoot 39 in the front, I'm like, oh, what happened on the back? He goes, I shot 37.
Whoa.
I'm like, whoa. So the first time this dude broke 90, he shot 76.
What?
It was crazy. What? And it wasn't me, because we had a couple lessons that they weren't the greatest lessons in the world. But he just, it blew my mind.
He went deep.
Yeah. It wasn't even close. That's why it is. It's just a dumb little number. It means nothing.
Yeah.
Why not? Why is it 90? Why not say 88? Or why not say 86?
Yeah, it's funny that it's 70, 89.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter that much.
I think I need to get a lobotomy, and then maybe I could really.
I coach a high school girls golf team. So that's, I mean, basically I tell them, I'm like, just stop thinking about anything ever, because that's how you play good golf.
Well,
because
it's true.
You can't, I mean, they have so much other crap going on in their life that they clog their head. That's the same with us. We just clog our head. Just get rid of it.
let's dig more into your history here. So, junior golf coaching, and then you decide to put pen to paper.
I did. I wrote a book. And actually, the thing that made me write the book was when my mom died. And that's one thing that not a lot of people know. And it was
based, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I don't know if you did. I don't tell a lot of people that. And so it was, she died.
Now my parents know.
Yeah. And the other three listeners, thank you very much. Yeah, she died in 2011 in May. And I would send out like emails to my students every week. Like, hey, come to this clinic. Hey, you know, bring a friend for free. All that, you know, golf stuff. And I wrote a story about her for this email during the week. And instead of sending out the 50% off a clinic email, I sent out this story about my mom. And I'm like, I don't know if this is even going to work. I don't know if people are going to read this or people are going to hate me or if...
You had an email list of how many people?
It wasn't a lot at the time. Maybe, I don't know, 1,000, 1,200, something like that.
And you would just weekly sit down and it was your way of kind of... It was like Facebook or
something. Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. And I just... Every Tuesday I'd send something out. And it was it was all golf related.
And it was like fix your slice?
Yeah, exactly. It was like little tips and stuff like that. And this time I completely switched it.
Whoa.
And it was all... It was a story about my mom and how we went to shopping together and she acted like a crazy person and it was really fun. And it was almost like therapy for me. Where some people... Like when someone dies in their life, you know, it's... You know, you're going to go on a weekend binge or you're going to do something stupid or you're going to do something that kind of hurts yourself. This one is, I just wrote and I wrote and I wrote and people liked it. And then they said, keep writing. So I said, okay, I'm going to keep writing. And eventually all these stories turned into a book. And that's what it was.
That was the basis of
the
book.
That was the basis of it, yeah.
Happy Golf Starts Here.
Yep, exactly.
Now, what does that title mean to you?
Boy, that's a good question.
I'm filled with them.
Basically, when I first came up with the title, I was trying to think of where actually golf comes from when you're playing it. And you'd agree with this, that it comes in your mind and it comes in your heart. It comes in a couple different spots.
Oh, where do you experience golf as
exactly.
a human?
Exactly. If you can shift it from your mind to your heart, it's easier. Because we overthink things all the time. And if you can feel it emotionally more than anything, that's for me when I play better golf.
Can you explain that to me in a more binary, in a more dumb way?
When I'm teaching golf and I tell someone to move their arm in a certain way or have their weight go in a certain way or mechanic stuff, most of the time the mechanic stuff doesn't work as well if I say, hey, focus on the target. What's your target? Your target is the flag. Oh, yeah, my target's the flag, but okay, how about the red checker of the flag? Or how about the left side of the cup when you putt? I don't like putting to the cup. I like putting at like 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock there, or I look at it and say, this ball is going to go in at about 9 o'clock.
It's way more effective.
It is. So if you focus outside yourself on the target, it's kind of Zen stuff too, but you got to get away from yourself and go outside to whatever that thing is you're trying to do.
Right.
Instead of have so many mechanics that tense you up.
Right.
Same type of thing. It just kind of, it's one of those things that I think that's one of the, I started playing better golf when I wrote.
What do you mean?
I didn't care as much about the mechanics of it, and how I looked and out driving. I don't hit the ball very far. I can out putt anyone though, but
yeah, you are.
I don't hit it very far, but that's what I started thinking about more when I played was, you know, how do I enjoy this more and what can I get out of this more? And it just translated everything else in my life too.
And so what did the answer become of how you enjoy and get more out of golf?
People. It's all people. It's all who you're matched up with. I used to get to the point where I wouldn't tell people my real occupation on the course because they go, hey, what do you do? Hey, what do you do? Well, I'm a golf pro. And right away it'd be like, oh, I'm hitting the ball to the right all the time. Can you help me with this? I'm like, no, I just want to play golf. I'm just trying to have fun.
That would be
tough. So I started making up occupations.
Really?
Yeah.
What would you say?
So I was a correctional officer.
No.
I was an actuary. my dad was always in on it too. So we do, I did dentist once.
Amazing.
And,
did they ask for
advice
there?
The dentist one, I almost messed up. Cause I in my head in the parking lot, I'm a dentist today.
Uh-huh.
And we get to the first tee and we introduce ourselves and like, hey, what do you do? What do you do? And the guy went first. He goes, oh, I'm a dentist. I'm like, oh crap, this guy's a dentist. And so I looked at my dad right away. And I switched. He goes, what do you do? I'm like, I'm an actuary. So I had to flip it right away. I don't think I can talk dentist with that guy.
No, you could not have. Because
I have molars. I can't talk about molars. No,
it would have been like, remember that scene in Spies Like Us when they're like, when they have to do surgery?
Yeah.
And the other doctor's like, the patient has been shaved. And they're like, of course. Bob Hope has a great line. Mind if I play through? Doctor, glad I'm not sick. That's so funny. You are kind of a prankster. And maybe that's kind of your childish nature.
It could be, yeah.
That's what I relate to. I was going to say earlier, like the idea of one of the things I really don't like is one of the things I really like is just talking about the things that are happening right now.
Yes, I agree with you.
You know, and I mean, this conversation, I think, is a wonderful exercise. And one of my favorite things about the podcast is that it's a reason to have a fucking interesting discussion.
Yeah, instead of texting someone or instead of, yeah, you're right. You can actually look at someone and talk to them.
Right. Or even even just like, okay, you have a period of time. Now talk about something and be interested and make it interesting. Whereas I feel like, you know, you could spend a lot of time in your life just sort of like, I don't know. It's just sort of like almost like not really getting at the heart of anything.
It's a lot of small talk.
Small talk
and
is
the
a
small
bit, yeah.
I like the, there's got to be something meaningful and something deeper. Because people want to talk about these things. I still think vulnerability is the key to everything.
I like that.
As long as you can, you know, kind of reach down and not worry about what other people think, which young Brian did that all the time.
Right.
Old Brian doesn't do that.
Kids have a good way of being fearless.
Uh-huh.
But what I was going to, further to that, I don't like the question of like, what's next for you, Eric? Or like, you know, we were playing golf with someone the other day and bless his heart, nice guy. But he said, tell me a story. And I was like, what? Like, huh? Like, what?
There's any story?
Like, that sounds like a job. Yeah. I think that's what I get paid to do. I'd rather just talk to you about kind of like the way the light is hitting the trees right now, or so. I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know what that is.
Isn't that how conversation goes though? Like you say something and someone else says something and all of a sudden you think of something else and you remember something from that happened to you.
Mm.
And then you mention that and then they're like, oh yeah, that happened to me too. And it goes back and forth. That's what a conversation.
Well, and I mean, that's an interesting point is conversation. There's a very subtle difference between interview and conversation.
Right.
And I think one of the things I really try to do with this podcast is not make it an interview. You know, I think conversation is way more exciting.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway, to get back to the interview.
Yes. Next question.
I just think kids have a way of looking at the world that's not, it's very immediate.
Yes.
It's very now, right? It's very what's happening right now.
Yep.
And I think adults, have you ever read The Little Prince?
Probably.
Oh, dude, you have to read it again.
Okay.
I'm telling you, please, like, I don't tell people to read shit because I know what of a burden it is. Like, I don't really read anything. But, The Little Prince is this wonderful story about a kid who basically outlines the difference between adults and children. It's written in the 30s, 1930s. Oh. Obviously not. Yeah, but anyway, and he sort of talks about the world of adults and how they're very confused about what's important. And I think you dig it. It's very.
I think it's true now.
It's heartfelt.
What's important?
Oh, it couldn't be more true.
Relate,
it's still very true. But anyway, I was going to go back to why kids are so refreshing.
I mean, I just watch them, and they can swing and miss 10 times in a row, and they hit that one golf ball down the range. Even if it doesn't go in the air, they're like, yeah, I'm good at this.
Right.
Yeah. And, they believe it.
Yeah, it's got to be exciting.
It's so much fun.
So you write the book, Happy Golf Starts Here, and then another thing happens to you in your life where you sort of continue on following your inner Ouija board of interests.
Yeah, and I kept writing it. One of the things I wrote about, this was actually 3 months after my mom died. So this was kind of before the book actually even came out. I wrote this thing. It was just a letter to my golf students. And it was going, as they went back to school, I'm like, hey, kids, when you're at school.
And more from the email list.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all it was. Yeah. So it just started
it's
email.
It's interesting to me that this email list for you, I think it kind of shares a similarity with, like, for me, the way I treat my Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Is it's kind of like an open letter.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm treating it like a blog. I'm treating it like, you know, I'm not going to post a photo and be like, I don't know. Like there's a lot of weird
shit. I had waffles
shit.
For breakfast. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's not, I don't really like to just post a photo and be like summer vibes.
Right.
Like, cause for me, it's more about like, well, we have an opportunity to actually say something that might be valuable.
I think that's what I appreciate about your Instagram too.
Oh, thank you.
Is that it's not just a sentence. It's, you know, this paragraph of this is what I'm thinking in the moment. This is what I'm feeling in the moment. I think that's awesome.
Thank you. And it doesn't always have to relate either.
No.
But I think your email list sounds like I relate a lot in that way of like this is sort of a avenue for connection.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And so I wrote this letter to them and it just basically said, that, hey, at school, you're going to love some stuff. You're going to hate some stuff. Some teachers are awesome. Some you're not going to like so much.
Right.
Some kids are going to be mean to you. Some aren't. But through everything, just be the nice kid. And that's what I told him. I kind of reiterated over the letters, just be the nice kid. This is going to happen. Just be the nice kid. This is going to happen. Just be the nice kid. And I started getting parents writing me back saying, hey, can you say this to my kids? Can you come to our schools and say this? And we don't care about the golf stuff, but come talk about being the nice kid. I'm like, okay, how do I do that? What do you want? And they said, just tell stories like you tell that, you know, that you send out. I'm like, okay. And so 7 years later, last fall, 7 years after I wrote this thing, somebody posted this little quote from my Be the Nice Kid letter, and it just went wild. I mean,
wait, seven?
7 years. I wrote this thing, this Be the Nice Kid letter, like 7 years ago when my mom died. And last 2000, what year is this? 2017, the fall of 2017. So I guess 6 years later at the time.
That's insane.
It blew up. It was shared 500,000 times on one Facebook page. It was shared a million times on another Facebook page. I was getting emails and letters and notes from people, and I didn't even know certain countries even existed. I thought it was cool though, because I'm right. Like, hey, this thing relates. And for me, it was just a little part of this letter. And this one little quote from it just kind of took off. So
That's crazy.
This golf pro in the summer teaches, you know, golf outside, and now in Minnesota, we can't do much in the winter outside. So I visit schools all over the country talking about being the nice kid, telling a bunch of stories, kind of inspiring them, motivating them, having fun with them, goofing around.
So this is so interesting. I mean, this is like what an incredible transformation.
There was no plan. And I told you, I was such the quiet kid when I was younger.
I could see that.
That I just didn't. I still kind of consider myself the quiet kid, but
you're kind of like, if left unattended, you would just kind of manage.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, you're just like, I'm gonna go over here and fuck with this shit, yep. And I'm gonna do that. And you're kind of interested, but you're not going to like demand the spotlight or the center of attention.
I don't need it.
I mean, the same with me.
Yeah,
I would probably just go mess around, and I'd probably start. I would probably find one person and just like become buddies, and then just like. Then go get into trouble.
That's the fun part, though.
Yeah. So the letter goes viral.
Yep.
And then like when are you faced with a decision or something? Are you?
I don't know if it's a decision because it works so well schedule wise that I can still teach golf. I can still hang. You know, I can summer wise is fine. There's no schools in session in the summer.
Right.
So then the winter, when I can't teach golf as much, I mean, I can still do inside stuff, but when schools want me to come, the hardest part is? The hardest part is being away from my family.
Sure.
So I try to schedule 2 or 3 day little trips just so I can kind of go out and visit some schools and then come back. And I'm actually bringing my kids to a couple of them, so that'll be fun.
I want to ask you about your schedule, but I just want to take a quick break for some ads, everybody. Just literally just don't freak out. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. Got a read here from Ben Hogan Golf. When legendary golfer Ben Hogan founded his equipment brand in 1953, he proclaimed his products would offer, quote, the best performing design, the best feel for contacting the golf ball, and the best eye appeal. I like that, eye appeal. Today, 65 years later, the Ben Hogan Golf Equipment Company remains committed to delivering a superior product line. And thanks to a unique factory direct business model, Ben Hogan handcrafted custom-made forged irons, wedges, hybrids, and utility clubs are available for hundreds of dollars less than golfers would pay for competitive products through traditional retail stores. Backed by risk-free demo and trade-in programs, golfers can enjoy best-in-class golf equipment, including the acclaimed Fort Worth Black and White irons, edge irons, or the popular Equalizer wedges, all developed and manufactured using Mr. Hogan's proprietary club-building process. That's right. Tour quality custom Ben Hogan golf clubs for a fraction of what competitive products would cost at retail. Don't pay unnecessary middleman markup. Visit benhogangolf.com and use the discount code Eric for 10% off your order. Visit benhogangolf.com and play with the quality and craftsmanship that Ben Hogan Golf Equipment is famous for. That's benhogangolf.com, discount code Eric, E-R-I-K, for 10% off your order. Check them out.
Adidas golf shoes, y'all. My favorite pair, I'm going to go with Adipure. I like the Tour 360 knit. Yeah, the knit one. Check out what DJ's wearing and get into that, my guy. Nothing compares to a pair that I wear on the course every time I play. It's true, y'all. I don't miss not being able to wear any other golf shoe because contractually I can only wear Adidas at this point. But the truth is, I couldn't imagine a better situation. And you know what? A little behind the scenes, I went to Adidas and I was like, look, guys, let me not wear any other golf shoe ever. And they were like, yes, sir. And I was like, yes. And then my agent was like, this contract is signed. Anyway, now all I wear is Adidas and I couldn't be happier. Comfort and stability is hard to find in golf shoes, but Adidas delivers every time. Quite literally every goddamn time. I've worn I've had so many friends tell me how comfortable their golf shoes are, how uncomfortable their golf shoes are, and I always tell them, buy Adidas, Boost, and my guy. Get into the Boost, y'all. Literally. It's very easy for me to talk about them because I actually like them. You can't beat Boosts. It's so comfortable. So basically, Adidas golf shoes, and then they're what? There's basically Adidas golf shoes, and then there's every other brand. True facts. No comparison. Adidas golf shoes every time, my guy. You can buy a pair at your local retailer or visit adidas.com and go to the golf section. Because where else do you want to go on adidas.com? You only want to go to the golf section to buy golf shoes. Also, follow adidas.com. I'm sorry. Follow Adidas Golf on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook for all the latest news and releases. Oh, big update.
So when you then basically most of the winter, how when you say you miss your family, like how long are you gone?
It's not a lot. I mean, I try to do like 2 or 3 day trips. It's not crazy long.
And the schools cover all your expenses.
Schools cover the expenses, and yeah, just
are you able to make money from this?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. The school will pay you a little bit.
Yeah, my goal is, you know, because there's obviously different levels of schools. There's some schools with big budgets, and there's some schools with no budgets. Mm. And I don't like picking and choosing kids based on if they can actually get me out there or not.
This is why you're fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's hard for me. So that's why
it's going to be very
hard. So if anybody wants to sponsor me out there to travel, it's hard.
By the way, how do people find you online?
BeTheNiceKid.com.
Boom.
Is where it is right now.
Okay, and that's the main way
to get in touch with you.
That's how to get in touch with you. That's how to see everything you've done.
Yep.
They can pick up your book through there.
Yep.
They can schedule a golf lesson.
Golf lesson is thehappiestgolfer.com.
Thehappiestgolfer.com. Yep.
So I have a couple different ones, but
that is a title that only one can name themselves.
Yeah, kind of. I figured, why not? Nobody else claimed it yet. I know. Might as well do it.
that's super cool.
Why not?
More normally people don't score themselves by feeling.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just that was one of the things I wrote is that this number doesn't define your character.
No, it doesn't.
And it shouldn't.
I was playing the other day with some beginners and she was like, I'm awful. And I was like, yeah, but guess who doesn't care? The three of us, right? We don't care. We just want you to have fun and, add to it without taking, because some bad golfers really want to let you know how bad they are.
Oh, yeah.
That's a hard one.
There, yeah.
That's a hard one. Or let you know why they're playing so bad.
Oh, I hurt my elbow there. Oh, yeah. I'm in a divot. Oh, that's
coming
golf
over the top.
I just got a haircut. Oh,
just,
dang it.
Just struggling with, just getting stuck.
Yep.
Oh, really? You're getting stuck? I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell because every shot is about 30 yards right.
Yeah.
You're a lefty. Are you a lefty?
I taught myself how to play lefty, but no, I'm righty.
You're righty.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought you were lefty.
That's right. I can hit the golf ball left-handed. But.
You're a gangster. You can do whatever you want.
I try.
Where's the farthest place you've gone?
Mostly United States stuff right now. So, I mean, I was in Boston last week, and now I'm in L.A. with you today, and I got a couple of schools tomorrow.
Schools.
Yeah, I'm planning. There's a lot of schools in Australia that are interested, so I'm hoping next year is I'm going there.
Just route out a trip there?
I'm almost to the point where if I can hit 3 weeks to a month there and hit a bunch of schools.
That's what you got
to
do.
Because I can only go there for 4 days.
Are you going to bring the sticks?
Yeah, I'll have to.
You got to bring the sticks, dude. Also, have you been to Australia?
I've never been there.
Dude, Australia has some incredible golf. Unbelievable golf.
It's so different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you ever consider, is there a hybrid here for golf? Like a Be the Nice Golfer?
I've actually done, I've done some school visits where we'll do talk to the kids in the morning. And then do a golf lesson with the parents in the afternoon. And then have a parents' night at night. And so it's like a full day thing. I haven't done too many of those, but they're fun because it incorporates everything. Because you can, like we talked about at the beginning, you can learn so much from golf that, you learn so much about yourself just from this dumb little game with a white ball.
Right.
And it can translate into other things.
Yeah. That's fascinating, Brian. I think you and I share a lot in common as far as golf is concerned. Where would you say is the largest opportunity within the game of golf right now?
As far as playing, like who's going to play, or as far as?
As far as, I just invented the question as I was opening my mouth. So I had nothing in mind. I just sort of started talking. So when I'm saying opportunity is Bill Murray.
Yeah.
When I interviewed him, I said, define golf in one word. And he said, it's an opportunity. And so I guess I was thinking about that.
I think it's, if we get away from the business side of golf, if we get rid of the score side of golf and you kind of dig deep, kind of like that's basically the small talk of golf. And you go deeper than that. You find out a lot. I mean, you find out that, that's when my mom died, that's the reason I wrote that, is that there's more to golf than the score. There's more to life than the stuff you have. There's just, there's so much more there. We're just scared to kind of go look for it.
Yeah.
And once you see that, once you, you stop making assumptions and you see these other things that can happen, you know, because everybody has an assumption of what golf's like. You know,
yeah.
Golf's an old guy's sport. Golf's a, you know, a rich guy's sport. It's, it makes sense. But when you dig deep into it, there's so much more you can find from it.
Right.
And I'm not going to, I can't tell people what they're going to find. They got to find it themselves. That's the hard part.
That is hard. What, any questions for me? That's a stall right there.
Yeah, yeah, that's all right.
I stalled.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, what is, well, you've been everywhere. You've been many places. You have a lot of adventures in golf all over the world. What hasn't golf given you yet?
Whoa. I thought you were going to go the most basic question I ever get, which is what's your favorite? What has golf not given me yet? Ah, I could burst into tears. What has golf not given me yet?
This isn't small talk anymore.
What has golf not given me yet?
And you might not know off the top of your head, but...
Yeah, I have a feeling like I don't know. I mean, I certainly do consider my life incomplete in the same way that Hemingway says that you're not a man until you've had a son. So I do dream of the day where Snowball is replaced with a human child. And
with a lot of white fur.
Yeah. Boy or girl, I just want them to be interested in golf. It would be very meaningful to me to share that with someone whom I'm tasked with essentially framing the world for, hopefully in a way that's like loving and interested. But yeah, I mean, that's not golf's fault. That's my own. That's because I married a psycho. Whoop!
I married a beverage cart girl. That's what I found in golf.
You did. Thank you for carrying me through that one.
Yep.
I married a wonderful woman who is now, you know, but we didn't have a kid. Yeah. Thank God. Mm-hmm. Thank Jesus. Everybody, all the deities. You married a cart girl. Let's move on.
I didn't marry a cart.
I think you did tell me that.
Yeah.
You guys met when you were quite young.
She was young. Yeah, we were, how old was I? 24, 25 maybe. She was 22, 23. So not super young, but she was a substitute golf cart girl. All our college girls went back to school. Our head pro needed someone, so he called in his wife, who happened to work with my wife now, and went from there. She asked me out.
There you go.
Yep.
That's Minnesota,
yep,
maybe.
It is. Yep.
Minnesota's a very different culture.
I told you I was scared of everything.
Yeah. How did she ask you out?
She called me. And she just said,
hey. How did she get your number?
Small town? She got it from the head pro's wife.
Nice.
Yeah. It's not, no, I wasn't.
Oh, you were working there?
I was working there, yeah.
Right.
I was actually working at two different places at the time.
Right.
And I met her at one place, and I just happened to be leaving the other place when I was teaching, and I heard this message on my phone and said, hey, it's Kim from the golf course. Just wondering if you want to go out sometime. And I'm looking back at this, you know, my second place, I'm like, who the heck is Kim from the golf course? Like, I just left here. There's no Kim that works here. I'm like, who's Kim? It took me like 2 minutes when I was driving home. Like, oh, the other golf course, the other Kim. Gotcha.
Right,
okay.
So that's
kind of how it started. And she's a golfer, good golfer.
Do you guys play together ever now?
Not as much. Not the old excuse, but
now you get
not
the kids.
As much with kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's good. She's a good player.
That's I do love hearing those stories, you know, on the podcast. There have been several people that have met through golf, mm-hmm. and gotten married in golf, and I just find those so random, romantic, and random.
We had another one at that same golf course where Kim and I met. That another beverage cart girl and another kid from that was working on the inside. They got married a few years ago. Yeah,
that's insane.
It's that course. So if you need to look for someone, if you want to get married,
yeah,
go to this golf course in Minnesota.
I do love all that. It's so exciting. Yeah, but I don't know, what has golf not given me? I mean.
Because it's given you a lot.
I've
watched your evolution. I mean, I know it's fun. It's
fun. Because we met a long time ago.
Yeah, before Adventures in Golf. Exactly.
Way before Adventures in Golf.
Yeah, way before.
Yeah.
And so it's fun watching you grow.
Yeah, it has been.
it's been cool.
A lot of growth. This past year has been insane.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it hasn't. I don't think there's anything it hasn't given me, really.
Good.
That I want. Like, there might be things that I don't know that I want.
That's usually what it is, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to break par. I would love to shoot a 69 or
Just play nine holes. You're good. You can do it.
Well, the irony is that if I play match play, I can go one or two under through three holes. No problem. Like, if you were like, play these next holes really well, I would be like, no problem.
Huh. And it's funny because if you said, hey, I'll bet you a quarter I can do better on this hole than you, I would like fold. I'd shoot it. I'd make a 12. Yeah. I don't bet on the golf course.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like to bet either. I just like to play a match.
I love match play. Match play is great. Yep.
I wish we had time to play golf. The local nine hole course is closed. The little nine around the corner.
Oh, yeah.
I canceled my country club membership.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I'm out. So we can't. Did we ever play
that? Come back with the rest of us. No, we never went there.
Sorry.
Come back with the rest of us.
Sorry.
Come to the Munis.
No, it was just like, you know, I don't need to be incentivized to play more golf. As much as I love it and I really value it, and I did get a lot of wonderful benefit, like, you know, through the wonderful people I met there. But in the end, I mean, I just have to work mostly. Yeah.
So. Too bad your work is on the golf course.
So I feel really bad about it.
Play where you want to play anyway.
I feel very bad about it. I guess, I mean, I don't know, dude. I'm excited for people to learn more about you and to, you know, I don't know. I'm excited to see what you end up doing with this. Like, cause I think
it's kind of the same way. I don't know. I don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm on the third hole right now and I got 15 more to play. I don't know where it's going.
I mean, that's the best way to look at it. Yeah. You know, when you get too planny, mm-hmm. then you just sort of...
Which is probably why you don't like people asking, what are you going to do next?
I really don't.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite episodes of Adventures in Golf were entirely unplanned. In fact, they were literally unknown at the beginning of the trip.
Is that scary for you, or is that the adventure part?
Not at all. The scariest is having a plan.
Ah.
Because when you have a plan, something can go wrong. But when there's no plan, there's no expectations.
True.
Which
is why people play well at the beginning of the year, too. There's no expectation.
That's true. Or like if you've taken a month off,
yeah.
First hole, birdie.
Yep.
That's how
it's
I roll.
Funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. The unplanned is entirely more interesting to me. Unfortunately, I can't shoot 10 episodes of entirely unplanned content for a large corporation.
How many are unplanned out of the 10?
This season, zero.
Okay.
But season two, two episodes were unplanned.
Oh, nice.
Askernish and...
which was... maybe the best one.
I would think so. Yeah. It's real.
Yeah.
And in addition to Askernish, the Himalayan Golf Club unplanned.
Nice.
And we explain the story in it, but you know, there's just something about I've learned something from Adventures in Golf in life that is it's better for me to go into something not knowing about the subject matter that we're about to...
I think that's different from a lot of people then too, isn't it? I mean, that's a ballsy thing.
Why?
Because I think a lot of people, they want the plan and they need the plan to feel comfortable. And it's, for you, it's the opposite.
Yeah, it is. In fact, I've found it's actually difficult for other people that I'm coordinating with.
I suppose, yeah.
Like, you know, Cameron McCormick?
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to schedule something. And it's very hard for me to schedule it because, I mean, I can schedule some things, obviously. Yeah. Alfonso Ribeiro coming up on the podcast. Very excited.
Nice.
I'm super excited.
Yeah, I'm really now.
Super excited about that. He's in the fucking, he's over in Sherman Oaks. But I mean, you know, with Cameron, it's like we're going to be in the same city and it is very hard to plan because a lot of my life is unplanned in as much as the content creation, you know, because you need to keep a certain level of freedom in order for the spontaneous to occur.
True.
But even more, like even going into an interview, not knowing something about a person is helpful. Knowing a few things is good, but in some ways, the uncovering of the interesting stuff.
So it's not like the late night vibe of the pre-planned questions and the...
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I could do that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It would be good, but I kind of like the long form of like, who are you? Oh my goodness, really?
You are?
Wow.
No way.
People, I think that's exciting. It's hard to do, but...
But I think you're right. It's more fun that way too, because you find out... You might find out a different thing. I talk to the kids at schools about that all the time. It's easy to figure out, you know, differences of people, but how do you find that connection? So I'll make them find connections.
Right.
Get four kids together. What's your connection?
Whoa.
Yeah, and
how do they do?
They do great. And I, you know, it can't be like, hey, you're all guys, or hey, you all go to the same school. It's that we have. I was at a school a couple of weeks ago. They're like, hey, we all have the same initials. I'm like, whoa.
That is
kind of crazy.
That's bizarre.
Or it's, oh yeah, we all have brothers and they're all our youngest sibling. I'm like, whoa. Cool. So it's just little things that may not be that meaningful, but
the exercise.
But we talked about it earlier too, that, you know, this world is so, we're just connected with everybody now that it's easier to, it's easier to find these connections now than it was a long time ago.
Right.
And it's more meaningful that way too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we have a hard time drawing similarities. I think we have a much easier time with finding differences.
Oh,
surprisingly,
yeah.
On the golf course, I don't know how we walk up to a golf course and don't have immediate like welcoming vibes. Like you do in Scotland, but in America, I'm frequently met with a glare.
Always.
And I say that it's me.
It's
but
me.
I don't. No. I don't think it is anymore. I think now it's them.
Because you see it a lot of different places.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I wish there was a way to fix that. There is a way to fix it, and we're doing it. But, you know, it's hard.
Do you think it's because so many people are concerned about themselves when they're on the course? They're concerned about the score, and they're concerned about how they look in front of other people. And they're, because, I mean, obviously it's more comfortable to play with people you know. But when there's two twosomes that get together, you know, what do you think the rift is? Or what do you think the...
I don't know. I mean, it's strange. It is unique to golf in some ways. I mean, it's not even unique to golf. Because, I mean, even like basketball. Like if I showed up to a basketball game and no one knew who I was, they'd be like, what are you doing? I think it is a lot of stranger stuff, like stranger danger. But I think it's also just like... Because it's not even country club. Like public courses.
Oh, it's everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, it's... I think, I don't. I should probably figure out what the fuck it is because it is something.
I'm because you're right. I don't have the answer for it either. I'm just kind of curious. That what do you see?
I think that they're worried. I think that people, when they see you on a golf course and they glare at you, I think they're worried that either you're better than them or worse than them or the same as them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
It's like they're just fucking worried, and I don't understand why. They're worried that you're going to make them slower. They're worried that you're very good or that you're going to make them look like an idiot. They're just worried that you're going to ruin their time in a weird way, it seems like. But meanwhile, it seems like they're ruining their time on their own.
Right, exactly. They're doing it to themselves.
It's a very strange thing now that we think about it. Because I see it a lot.
You probably see how that, I mean, I'm the same way, but you look at these people like, why are you on the golf course?
You know what
why
it
are
is?
You playing?
You know what it is? I think part of it is that no matter what club you're at, public, private, whatever, I think golf somehow baked into its DNA. If you're in a foursome, you have your tribe, and yes. Then every other foursome is an asymmetrical tribe, where they are not part of your tribe, which is kind of sad because it's actually they are much closer to being in part of your tribe than the
if you allow them.
Yeah, but I think for some reason when you see another foursome on the golf course, the innate response is to sort of question their presence on the planet. Why is that?
Why is you're right. People are playing too slow. They're playing too fast. They're pushing me. They're
yeah, and exactly. They're playing too fast. Yep. They're playing too good. They're playing too bad.
Yep.
They're it's whatever yep. it is. It's fucking Goldilocks. Yeah.
They're too loud. Oh, why aren't they saying anything? They're too quiet. They're
yeah.
Right. It's
yeah. They're too Asian.
Yeah.
They're too white. They're too not
they're too
like
old.
Me.
They're too young. They're female. That's you know, that's a big
oh,
one.
Oh, female. Yeah.
I hate that. That drives me nuts.
Yeah.
As a coach.
bunch of women in that group.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, those women can kick your butt.
Yeah, it's very strange. The immediate is guilty.
Right.
It's wrong. It's guilty. They are not like me. Why is that? Why do we walk through a golf course assuming that everyone else on the golf course is not? I mean, obviously there are exceptions to this rule, but I would say they're in the 10, 20%.
Right.
30% maybe. Where a person would come to you and be like, how are you? Have a nice day. It's such a great day out here. That in Scotland, that's like 70 or 80, 90%. But in America, it's more like they like just sort of fucking stare at you.
Yeah,
and I think really the reason is that it's almost like a DNA thing. Like pointer dogs, they point. Retriever dogs pick things up and don't break their neck, right? Fucking every dog has its own task. Golfers, through evolution in America, American golfers, quote unquote, they were taught that golf is an exclusive private game. You know, of the 18,000 courses in America, how many are private? I think it's a majority, actually.
Yeah, it's quite a few.
And so we have been taught since the last 130 years that American golf is an elite game that is exclusive. And no matter where you're playing, even if it is a public course that allows anybody, including dogs,
yep.
That, you know, just by the nature of it being golf in America, it is, you know, those other people must be verified before trusting. And so, whereas in Scotland, it's like, no, the town owns the fucking land, and you could join any club and you can play it. And the dues are actually less than your phone bill. Whereas in America, you can barely get on Wilson for the price of your rent for a year. Anyway, I think that's actually what it is.
Have you found any courses in the US that are accommodating like that?
Yes.
And that are like, hey, this is my place because everybody's cool here. Nobody cares about how anybody else does. They don't look at people with that glare.
Absolutely, yeah. I have. Well, and I have. And I can name them, right? Bethpage. Absolutely. Bethpage is one of these wonderful equalizers, right? People come to Bethpage from all different walks of life. And one of the great things about Bethpage is that they're surrounded by the common experience of this is ours, right? This is ours.
It's ours, yeah.
Exactly. Like it's a we, not a me.
Yep.
Goat Hill, right, down in San Diego.
Oh, I love the Goat Hill.
You played
Hill.
There. Yep. We were there together.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because I played Tori and I played Goat Hill. And Tori was great, but I loved Goat Hill. Yeah. I would go back there 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, Tori's great. Give me 10 rounds. I'm taking 9 at Goat Hill.
Yep.
Maybe even 10.
Okay, I'm taking 10. The people were cool. It was just fun.
Goat Hill's great. Goat Hill with the music, the communal vibes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that place is engineered to run opposite.
Yeah, and it's done well.
It does.
Yeah, it's everybody feels comfortable there.
And again, it's engineered with the we.
Yes.
Right? You know, but beyond those two, I don't know. I mean, also, I mean, it is a little bit hard for me to gauge now because now, like, I went to a Trump course, Trump Ferry Point in New York, and I probably would have found that place quite douchey. But now I go and people are like, oh, that's the guy from so-and-so. And yeah. So they're nice to me now.
Gotcha.
Not like they would have been mean to me prior, but I definitely stuck out in an...
You gotta do like an undercover one next.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I could do that. No, but that is a nice feeling. I mean, you know, but yeah,
maybe that's how you grow golf. We're talking about growing golf. Maybe that's how you do it. People feel comfortable when they go.
Yeah.
And you got to replicate the ones that are doing it right. Well, Scotland and Goat Hill. Get those two.
It is a strange thing. I mean, but then again, I mean, you can apply this to, I mean, I get into an Uber and I feel like a jerk. Like, what did I do wrong? I'm paying you to do something and you agreed that you would do it. And now you're being a jerk to me because why? I find this all the time. I get really pissed off because I'm pretty cheap. Not cheap, but I'm like, I look for the value in where I'm putting my money. And so like, I've now committed, I only do Uber Select. Or Uber XL, because the Uber X, they make me feel like I've burdened them by getting in their car.
And I'm like, why are you paying me money?
They like pull over to get a Subway sandwich, and I'm like, that the ETA was, I'm going to be late. I got to, no, but I mean, you know, it's like, on some level, the customer service in golf is a bit upside down. I don't understand why. I don't understand why, if their business is hurting, why are they rude? When you're like, you know.
Yeah. Like, how hard is it to say, hey, thanks for coming out today. We really appreciate it. You know, here's a drink. Here's some teas. Here's a couple golf balls. Hey, thanks for playing. It can't be that hard, is it?
In Scotland, every course that you walk off of, no matter who it is that sees you first, they say, where are you from? What'd you think of the course? Did you have a nice time? In America, they're like, the carts go over there. No shoes. No carts in the parking lot. Leave now.
Our restaurant's closed.
Yeah, restaurant's closed, and I accidentally undercharged you. I need $50. I mean, you know, like, it's just so weird. Anyway, if you're listening and you have any ideas about this, you have any experiences about that, I'd love to hear those. Check us out, the Eric Lang Show at gmail.com. We're going to Brian. Check out Brian, Bryan.
Yep.
Skavnak, Skavnak. You're on Instagram.
I'm on Instagram.
What's that?
That's actually just my name on Instagram, but
yeah,
go to Be the Nice Kid on Instagram instead. Better.
Yeah, Be the Nice Kid on Instagram. The website, BeTheNiceKid.com.
Yep.
And what's the golf one?
TheHappiestGolfer.com.
TheHappiestGolfer.com. Thanks for joining us,
hey,
Brian.
Thanks, man. This has been great.
That was great. We were having cookies. We had our paleo cookies.
I've never had the paleo cookie before until today.
It was good.
Now I've had two of them, and I'm never leaving.
Boom.
Yep.
Yeah, I made those on a whim today. I just thought, you know what? I got these in the cookie. Will Schwartz is up here. We're cooking up like YouTube algorithms, which is, by the way, like a night. Like, I can't. It's too much. It kind of grinds me down. I don't really enjoy the whole, like, you know, it's funny because you had this like post blow up.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't really enjoy the algorithms and the metrics of all of this social media stuff. I like making content and I like being myself.
Yep.
I like recording the podcast, but I don't like...
That's the way you got Will the intern now. He can worry about that stuff. You worry about the content.
Will, let's make that bread.
And some cookies.
Let's get this bread. I've toned down the paleo cookies because I got a lot of complaints.
What?
I got a lot of shit for it.
For what?
I guess it's gross to eat food on a microphone. So they're still a part of the lexicon. They're still valuable. It's still an interesting part of the story. If you want to make paleo cookies, the recipe's on my YouTube channel. There's a video there where we talk about the making of the paleo cookie. Anyway, that's it. So you had the paleo cookie with two thumbs up?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
If I had another thumb, I'd throw that one up.
See, you had a hot one, too, with vanilla ice cream.
You're right.
That was huge.
The most expensive vanilla ice cream you've ever had?
It was. Well, it's only like $5. Yeah, okay. A pint.
Okay.
That's kind of expensive.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian. Have a good afternoon. And, the current sign-off is I'll see you in the showers. So we're just going to keep going with that.